Khartoum lay in a torpor of despair, weak with plague and deprivation. The girls' voices were in penetrating contrast to the brooding silence around them. "There's one coming," Saffron sang out. "I know, I saw it long ago," Amber chanted. "That's a lie, you never did."
"I did."
"Stop that squabbling, you two little harridans," David Benbrook ordered sternly, "and point it out to me." Their young eyes were sharper than his. "Over there, Daddy, straight above Tutty Island. Just to the left of that little cloud." "Ah, yes, of course," David said, slipped the butt of the shotgun under his right armpit and turned to line up with the approaching bird. "I was just testing you."
"You were not."
"A little more respect, please, my angel." Nazira heard their voices. She was on her way back to the kitchen carrying a pitcher of water that she had drawn from the well in the stable yard. She had been going to boil and filter it, but the voices distracted her. She set the pitcher on the table beside the front door, next to the cluster of glasses on the silver tray, crossed to the window of the dining room and looked out over the terrace. The consul stood in the middle of the brown, burnt-out lawn. He was staring up into the sky. There was nothing unusual in his behaviour. For many weeks now he had spent each afternoon on the terrace watching for any bird to come within range of his shotgun. She turned back to the kitchen, but absent-mindedly left the pitcher of unboiled water on the table with the glasses. Behind her she heard the thud of the gun and more excited squeals from the twins. She smiled fondly and closed the kitchen door behind her.
"You got him, Daddy?"
"Oh, clever paterfamilias!" This was Saffron's latest addition to her vocabulary. The pigeon tumbled in the air as the pellets plucked a burst of feathers from its chest. It fluttered down and crashed into the top of the branches of the tamarind tree above the palace bedrooms. It stuck there 30 feet above the ground. The twins raced each other to the base of the tree and clambered up it, arguing and pushing each other. "Be careful, you little demons," David called anxiously. "You're going to hurt yourselves." Saffron reached the bird first. She was the tomboy. She balanced on the branch and stuffed the warm body into the front of her bodice and started down again.
"You're always so overbearing," Amber accused her.
Saffron accepted the compliment without protest and jumped the last few feet to the ground. She ran to her father.
"It's got a note," she shrilled. "It's got a note, just like the others."
"Goodness gracious me, so it has," David agreed. "Aren't we lucky? Let's see what the gentlemen across the river have to say for themselves." The twins danced after him as he carried the dead pigeon into the hall. He propped the shotgun against the wall and fumbled in his coat pocket for his pince-nez and clipped it onto the end of his nose. Then, with his penknife, he cut the thread that held the tiny roll of paper and spread it carefully on the table beside the pitcher and the glasses. His lips moved silently as he deciphered the Arabic script, and slowly his benign expression changed. It became alert and businesslike. "This is the most wonderful news. The relief column has smashed up the Dervish army in the north. Now they'll be here within days. I must take this note across to the general right away," he told the twins. "Go in and ask Nazira to pour your bath now. I'll be a while, but I'll come to your room to say good night." He clapped his hat onto his head and set out down the terrace towards Gordon's headquarters. Saffron snatched up the shotgun before Amber could reach it. She held it tantalizingly, like another trophy, under her sister's nose.
"That's not fair, Saffy. You always do everything." "Oh, don't be a baby." "I'm not a baby."
"You are a baby, and you're sulking again." Saffron carried the shotgun across the lobby and into her father's gunroom. Amber watched her go with her clenched fists on her hips. Her face was flushed, and her hair was sticking to her forehead with perspiration. She saw the pitcher on the side table where Nazira had left it. With an angry flourish, she poured herself a glass of water, drank it, and pulled a face.
"Ooh, it tastes funny," she complained. "And I'm not a baby, and I'm not sulking. I'm just a bit cross, that's all."